Zach, did you get your free taco?
Let's talk about tacos. No, I didn't. I live like 1 mile from a Taco Bell. Please don't find me. And I saw this story and asked you to write it, but no, I did not get my free taco. I did have Taco Bell last night though, and it was a quesadilla with a taco.
Nice. Apparently there's a new phase, which I'm like, I looked at this and I'm like, I don't know if there's technically a new phase of a moon. Like, it's going to the last quarter. I think the new phase starts this weekend when there's the new moon, but like, and then it said that the moon looked like a taco, and this was May the 4th, so Star Wars Day. Yeah. But technically, it was already going to be more crescent on that day. It looked like a taco on like Monday,
right? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But, so Taco Bell gave out free tacos because of the way the moon looked like a taco, in their opinion.
It did look like a taco. Yeah.
It did. My takeaway on this is that. If Taco Bell is embracing space, then space is mainstream.
When Taco Bell does something, it's great.
It's like, obviously they're going to be the first restaurant on the moon.
Of course, it's Taco Bell. They're going to be the first place on Mars too. Like, they're going to send parts to build a Taco Bell on the first like mission to Mars. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's actually a Taco Bell on the ISS as well. It's a module that doesn't get discussed very often because it's really complicated, but there's a Taco Bell.
Is it connected to the Bigelow?
Yeah, it has a drive-thru too.
It expands as a Taco Bell.
Yeah, that's something we'll discuss later on. That's what Starliner is trying to do.
That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah,
OFT2, the mission is to... Taco Bell had
development issues. Yeah, OFT2,
the mission is... how to get their fire sauce to work in zero-G.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, so this is going to be 2 weeks worth of news on this episode. So we're going to start off with some SpaceX news, of course, as always. So first thing is going to be talking about their human landing system. Of course, last time we talked, they did get the it was in the last two episodes. They talked about that it was rumored that they got the contract, and then last week they did get the contract, or 2 weeks ago they got the contract. And now I think actually in the notes of in the show notes I said Blue will probably protest this. Within days Blue filed a protest.
Yeah, and then Blue Origin,
a few days later Dynetics also filed protest.
Yeah, which I think the way that they phrased it is that they want to like reevaluate based on their low budget. And
yeah, I don't
how they can chop it up.
When it first came out, there was a lot of like, "Whoa, of course they're protesting. They want the money." Like, of course, there's protests always when there's this much money going around. Mm-hmm. So, but it seems like though that Blue Origin and Dynetics weren't given the chance to lower give them the new bid with the lower price,
right?
I think SpaceX would still probably be cheaper. Imagine if, okay, fine, we get to do this. And then Blue Origin goes, fine, we'll do it for $2.9 billion. And then SpaceX goes, we'll do it for $1.5 billion.
Like, I mean, the trick with SpaceX is that they're developing Starship anyway for their own interest.
And, yeah.
And we're not seeing that from Blue Origin. I mean, the Blue Moon concept is like in the future, eventually, you know, it's mm-hmm. an idea, but it's not something that they're actively developing today.
Yeah, like most of the engines like weren't developed. Like there wasn't the money to develop the engines with Blue Origin. But yeah, NASA had the because of the protest and to the was Office of Government Accountability or something, Government Accountability Office. They had to pause. Like NASA had to completely like pause their whole like deal with SpaceX over the HLS contract. And yeah. SpaceX is like, all right, cool. So we're going to launch anyways.
I mean, yeah, because SpaceX is doing it before. It's, yeah. Again, it's their own.
It doesn't really matter. Like, yeah. So, yeah.
It's like, yeah, the investment will help. And like, it gives them a SpaceX or a Starship customer. That's a big deal and a big endorsement. But yeah, they're gonna develop anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't. There probably won't be any major changes, like other than maybe a price drop. Like maybe they'll be like, okay, fine, put your new bids in. Which I think if they do that, they have to open up to anyone. They don't. It's not just the three they selected. I think other people can bid in. So Boeing could probably rebid, which would be hilarious.
But it doesn't sound very expeditious.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they've been working on anything at all. So I don't think they would. So, but no, they would have to redo, like go through the whole process. Not sure how long that would take. Maybe another like 6 to year or something. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But there might be then also, this might go to Congress and they might go, hey, like, all these people are upset because we can only afford one. How about you give us some more money? Like,
so and Congress wants to have
congressmen. They were upset that they didn't have two.
Like, yeah, they want to. I think there's several two reasons. One, they're upset because there's not like a legacy provider.
SpaceX is only in. It's a one. SpaceX is like a 1-2 state company, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Compared to someone like Blue Origin, who has Washington, Alabama, and all their other contractors, like Lockheed Martin and Blue Origin was with. ULA was with Dynetics, like mm-hmm. who's also like with Alabama and Mississippi and stuff like that. Yeah. So
even the congressperson from Texas was like, "Boo!" <You know? laughs>
And they have two facilities in Texas.
Not in my backyard. Yeah,
you're headquartered in Texas, and you didn't like. But yeah, they wanted two, which might be, you know, like, okay, cool, we'll do it too, but we need more funding. Like, mm-hmm. we can't afford to. So. If the cheapest filled out the funding, like, what can you do? Yeah. So we'll see how this plays out. We won't know about it for a while now, though. So it's going to take a while.
Yeah. And the best part about it is it's not going to slow down HLS development, the human landing system development, because
development's not going to pause at all. Yeah. If SpaceX is going to be doing it, they might develop like the interior of HLS like stuff, or like the landing thrusters that they want to use, like instead of the Raptors, but it's not going to slow down Starship development whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, we'll just jump right into Starship. Speaking of Starship stuff, SN15 flew and it nailed it.
Yeah. So Starship, the prototypes that have flown so far of this rocket in development, that has like the look of the rocket, you know, is SN8, which,
what do you mean? It's not a water tower.
The water tower ones, the grain silo ones, they seem further off. I mean, just visually. But I guess the first high altitude test was SN8, and then SN and it flew, pulled off the belly flop maneuver and landed, and then kept landing to the point of combustion and exploded.
SN8, launched just perfectly fine, did the belly flop fine, did the flip and burn or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. It actually did that. It just, one of the engines died pretty much. And then right before landing, SN9 was very similar, except it didn't light on the burn on the flip part. So it just face planted in the ground. SN10. Yeah. SN10 technically landed.
It landed for a few seconds.
Like, and then it did technically fly again.
When it blew up. Yeah.
That one had another engine issue right at the end of landing, to where you can see in slow motion it hop. Like
SpaceX Extreme ended before it blew up. They were like, we did it.
technically SN10 flew three times. It launched, and then it bounced when it landed, and then it blew up.
And then there's SN11.
We don't know what happened with that.
Yeah.
Officially it was a hard start on the engine, which pretty much means the engine blew up.
Mm-hmm.
So I just blew up the entire rocket.
And SpaceX has always kind of said, or Elon has always kind of said, that the reason you go from SN11 to 15 is because there's just a lot more advanced what they've learned from test flights in those engines and that design. So
yeah, like there's a lot of changes they've said over the testing development. They've added
so SN11
changes. The biggest changes are in the engines. They have new engines. Well, they're still Raptors, but they're like nearer to the full production version of the Raptor. Before, we've been seeing kind of like just R&D Raptors that like, hey, it worked. Let's see if it flies. Like,
yeah,
there's like now they're more like they're much cleaner looking. They apparently they have a green nozzle now instead of painted. Don't know what that is, but
that's the trick right there.
yeah. It's green nozzles is what made it work. And so, yeah, it landed. It's still there on the pad. They moved out like a second crane out there, and I don't know what they're doing. So
yeah, it's like they didn't really have a plan for what happens if this thing works. It's
like, they did it. It was like, oh, it landed. Now what? What do we do? But Elon has said that if they land it, they're going to go orbital like on the next flight. So they do have SN16 just sitting there in the high bay, almost complete with manufacturing. Don't know what's going to happen to it. Maybe it turns into a lawn ornament. Imagine that. Imagine just a starship just chilling outside the build plant, the manufacturing area, just right by the restaurant, maybe by Boca Chica Village, just sitting there. Just like move it there, set it, and just forget about it. Mm-hmm. What might happen possibly, because they did this with Falcon 9. If you look back on what they did with Falcon 9 after they first landed, boosted 1019 on, oh gosh, was it Orbcom? Is there Orbcom or a CRS mission? I don't remember which one it was, but they landed it, they took it, put it up on back on the launch pad and restatic fired it, like right away. So they might do that. They would do that. That would go on pad B, because they launched from pad A and that needs refurbishment. So yeah, but right now, if they do go orbital, it would be on SN20. So they'll probably just skip right to building SN20 and then booster number 3. They still have to do, so no idea what the date is. I think it could be middle of this year, it could be end of summer, because they have to do booster development. They have BN1 currently. I think they still have BN1 currently in the high bay as well, which is massive. It's like 1.5 times the height of a starship. So they still have to do testing with that. Was a Pathfinder. Then I think they said they're going to do BN2 with some more tests, and then
I can't wait to see the full stack starship.
I can't wait either. I don't care even if I see it fly.
Yeah.
I just want to stand next to it. Like,
yeah. For scale.
Like, they move it all out to the pad and then we can just drive next to it, just look up and just be like, oh my God. Like, yeah. I'll definitely be going down the Boca. I see myself going the Boca a few times this year now.
Yeah. And by the way, shout out to our Space Support colleague, Derek Wise, who was there for the last
week. Decided to get up and leave. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect timing, too. He just said, like, I'm just going to go to see SN15 fly. I'm like, all right, cool. Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Great job and for him.
From what I understand, he had a magical experience as we did as well. So when we went.
Yeah. Before. He didn't get to see explosion, though.
That's what I told him today when he stopped by on his way home. It was like, sorry, I'm going to see a big boom.
I was like, that was kind of the best part of seeing like early Starship development. Was like, I mean, we're probably going to see it explode. And it's probably going to be awesome. And it's not going to be. It's not like it's like a guilt free explosion.
Yeah, there's many more ready to go. So
yeah, SN15, it flew, it landed. I'm working on a post right now to get, you know, people. There's a bunch of limited edition merchandise that came out from different people. So
nice.
I'm gonna write something so you guys can all get. I ordered like way too much.
Of course you did.
Way too much. So
I told Derek they could have at least, you know, detonated the onboard bomb.
That. It landed. And all right, landed. Just blow it.
Yeah. Yeah. And a couple of things I want to think about on this one. So we'll talk about Blue Origin in a moment. But didn't this happen on the same day as Blue Origin's big announcement this week? Right. It was just
this
later
all
in the day
on the 60th anniversary of Alan Shepard's flight as well.
Yeah, and that was even 60
years
the
of human space flight. 6 years of human spaceflight, because it was the same year that Yuri Gagarin flew. Yuri Gagarin's anniversary.
Fair.
A few months ago. So, right, like, yeah. 6 years. Within 60 years of human spaceflight, 65, I think, years of spaceflight in general, I'm not sure. Like, we're getting the first rocket to go to Mars. It's not just, like, to try to get someone to Mars. Like, get someone to Mars sustainably. It's just landed its first test flight.
And just to say quickly, you know, what Blue Origin did, they announced a target date for their first crewed flight on New Shepard. And so isn't that like, what is it, like July 30th or
July
something? July 30th? Okay. I think that's when Starship should go orbital.
You know what? That's not that far. That's not that far off of what was been rumored. Like, for a date either. July doesn't seem, I think Elon has said sometime in July, if they could. July 20th.
Yeah, so
an S16 with crew on it.
So add in the delay, and then you get to July 30th, and
that's not that far off. Like that would actually be hilarious.
Yeah, Blue Origin goes suborbital.
I made a tweet
with crew.
I made a tweet out when it had like after it flew, and it was a little bit my inner SpaceX fanboy came out because I was kind of salty about the, we'll talk about Blue Origin. I was kind of like, I'm like, eh, like I don't like the way they did it, but whatever.
Yeah.
And then I saw that and I'm like, yep. I mean, did an auction for the mega rich and then they landed a mega rocket, and it was received with mixed results. Let's just say that.
Yeah. So let's go from the western part of the Gulf of Mexico to more central around the Panama City area and talk about Crew One.
So Crew One splashdown. First time they had a night splashdown since apparently Apollo 8. Or was it 8 mm-hmm. or 10? One of the Apollo missions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think they said 8. So, it splashed down at night. Crew One was, of course, the mission that launched back in November. SpaceX rocket.
Did you see that in person?
Technically, I saw it from Fort Lauderdale.
Okay, yeah, I was on base for the Crew One launch, and that was, I think, the word I used at the time, romantic, because there's four astronauts on board, and it was the I saw Demo 2 from Titusville, but I got to see Crew One from on base, and they look just like any other Falcon 9 launch. They're great, but just knowing that there's four people on board is like romantic. And this is the conclusion of that. Like, I mean, it's they lived on the space station for 6 months and they came back, and it's like that's the conclusion of the first operational SpaceX crewed flight to ISS and back. So
It landed, and I think for like the week prior, the Coast Guard was like just putting out videos just saying like, do not come. Like, it is a restricted area. Like, do not show up with your boats.
I'm sure that the time of day helped, because it was the middle of night.
Yeah, it was at the middle of night, pretty much. I think it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, I think, was splashdown. It was just stupid early. And I also think they didn't move the location, because I think the last time they did it right off the coast. Like far enough away where you couldn't see the coastline, but like close enough to where your average fishing boat, your average just boat can get to.
True.
So this time it was much further out into the Gulf. So I think that also helped.
So far the splashdowns have been in Pensacola for DM2 and then Panama City for Crew One. And so it's just, there's about just what, five or six.
They're just hitting the spring break locations.
Like, yeah.
You gotta go to Boca Chica, or is it, South Padre Island next?
Yeah.
Maybe? And, Miami next after that
would be if something very bad happened, I think, but they're working their way back up to the Cape and then Jacksonville if they go on all out Florida. So
and it arrived actually yesterday into port. So Crew One, and they did make changes to the boat. I don't know if you noticed that. Did you watch it?
What did they change at 2:30 in the morning? I don't know. I think I was asleep.
Did you watch it afterwards?
What's different about the boat?
So they actually added more walls, and they actually like redesigned kind of like the area that like the people walked on. So if you watch for DM2, there's like railings and like weird places, and like it felt like everyone was like not in the most optimal place to be in case like there was an issue, or like when like had to move around, they had to move around each other a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So like they added more walls off of the side. So now like when they move, so Go Searcher and Go Navigator were the boats. When they have the big crane off the back, they lift the Dragon up, they put it on what they call the nest, and then the nest moves it in towards the middle of the boat. They actually now have that entirely like surrounded by walls, pretty much. So even if there's like, even there would be like people showing up trying to see them get out of the capsule, they couldn't, pretty much. So, and they only showed Mike Hopkins getting out of the boat too, getting out of the capsule. Did his little dance, and then like it was like right back. They just showed Mission Control the entire time.
No, oh, well, so. he's the captain. So
commander.
I mean, once it splashed down, he's the captain.
technically, he's the boat.
Yeah.
He should have a little sailor's hat when he gets out. That's what he should.
That's right.
Have.
Ahoy!
I didn't get to ask the question. I signed up to do the question, and I was like doing something else yesterday. Also, I realized there was the press call. I just totally missed it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask if they were doing that. This happened twice, two times in a row, because they did it before they went down and then afterwards. And I missed both calls when I was just busy doing something else.
You're dedicated.
And I know I'm terrible. And I wanted to call and see if they did any prank calls.
Oh.
Because they did with DM2, and they had four people this time. They could have done so many prank calls.
That's true.
So more flights coming up this week. Another historic flight is coming up apparently this Saturday, early Sunday morning, Saturday night, which is like 2 o'clock in the morning again.
Mm-hmm.
The first 10th flown booster from SpaceX.
Yeah, so SpaceX will attempt to do a Starlink satellite mission with a booster that is launched and landed 9 times. And so what we'll see is the 10th launch for the first time, and then, you know, ideally the 10th landing for the first time. So it'll be the which is kind of like the minimum goal that they want out of Falcon 9 boosters. The first phase booster is like at least 10. And then from there, we'll see. But this is exciting.
Starlink launches have just gotten way more interesting.
In the
DM2, I can't remember if it was post launch press conference, Elon Musk mentioned that they're going to launch their Starlink missions on the flight leading booster until they see a fault, until there's a failure,
or if SiriusXM
just made them way more interesting,
or if SiriusXM wants a discount, like what happened when it was like a
fifth or a sixth flown booster, I think.
Okay. I think it was pretty far out there, though.
It was one of the most flown commercially bought flights, I think. I'll have to check and see if any of the Iridium ones were higher, but I think they weren't, because Iridium was like much later in the reviews. I don't think they had many that much flown. But yeah, it's another Starlink mission. It's their 20th.
It was the seventh mission for that booster.
They really did want to. They really needed the discount
for SXM-7.
Poor rest in peace. I haven't heard any news of what happened to that payload. Like, there was an issue, and then I think it's gone. Like, I think they said that it was lost, but they would check and see if they can save it. But
yeah, nothing to do with SpaceX's fault. They did their job, and I don't know if it's announced yet, but there's the next.
I don't know whose fault it was. Probably, who knows?
Yeah.
So
back to 7 comes
Starlink.
8.
Yep. So 8's gonna replace it pretty much. Yeah. So this weekend a 10th phone booster. From SpaceX, should be interesting. Should be exciting. Now we're going back. I think it was also like 2 weeks ago. The cover from last week. The first United Launch Alliance launch happened
of the year.
Okay, ULA, they focus on defense, so it's not. It's pretty normal that they don't launch that much a year. They launch more than before SpaceX came. They launched the most. But even if you take away all of Starlink missions, I think SpaceX has flown SiriusXM 7, Crew 2, and I'm trying to think of any other commercial mission other than Starlink.
Yeah.
I think that's it. So, the reason why SpaceX launches a bunch is literally just because it's their internal missions. But, first one was impressive, is that it was a Delta IV Heavy from Vandenberg.
Yeah, so out in California.
It launched on the first time.
unlike the previous Delta IV Heavy launch, which took about 3 or 4 months.
So if you've listened to the podcast, you might remember when Zach and I would do it when we started this. We were in the middle of like a real long launch campaign for NRO 44, which was from the East Coast. And that took, it was like 3 or 4 months long. Mm-hmm. And that thing was on that rocket was on the pad for well over a year.
And we were actually at SN8 Starship launch when that Delta IV Heavy finally did lift off.
Yeah, someone wanted to stay home and be with his kids or something, and then we couldn't watch it. So someone decided that decision. I don't know who it was.
I'm a good dad.
I think we got back when it launched pretty much. We got in the Mississippi when it launched. Yeah. So, and this is also, I realized this is the first Delta IV Heavy with the Space Force insignia.
Okay.
You could see, I missed it when it launched, but I was looking back through and I looked at the photo and it had the Air Force insignia. You could see that it was painted over white and you can just see the outline of it because they painted up with newer white and they put the Space Force insignia, the Delta, on top of it.
Beautiful.
It looks so much better. The Air Force insignia, no offense to the Air Force, does not look as good as Space Force Delta. Not even close. So yeah, it launched a classified payload, most likely a keyhole satellite, imaging satellite. So from Vandenberg. And Delta IV Heavies are always great. From the best pad. I think it's the 6-6, I think it's called, or 3. The former shuttle pad that was supposed to be out there. Oh, that pad. We can go on forever about how great that pad is. It's the best pad ever. Now, for NASA news this week, Bill Nelson, who was the nominated by President Biden to be the NASA administrator, had one of the probably the quickest confirmation hearings I've ever witnessed.
Like, it was also one of the earliest nominations for in recent presidencies.
Yeah,
of,
within
of a NASA
100 days.
Administrator. Yeah,
yeah. Was it within 100 days or just after 100 days? I don't remember.
But it was around there. The nomination was within.
Yeah, and I remember I watched the confirmation hearing. It wasn't even just him. Like, it was him and like three other people. There's like doing a confirmation hearing all at once. They asked them like four questions. And it wasn't even questions. It was just like, would you work with me on this? Yeah, I'll work with you on this. Cool. Thank you. That was it for questions or just talk about how great he is. Yeah, he was. Yeah. And unanimous consent, which I think means like no one. I don't think it was a vote. They just no one objected pretty much. I think is what it was. So, and he was sworn in by Vice President Harris.
Kamala Harris, yeah.
This week. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with Moonrock from, I think it was Apollo 17 that was present.
Yeah.
And I think we talked about why didn't he get sworn in on with the Moonrock.
Yeah. And Jim Bridenstine was there virtually.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. So you had not just, okay. So this is really actually kind of cool. So Bill Nelson, of course, was a senator from Florida, and I can't remember why he was a senator. He was also a representative.
He was a congressman before that. Yeah.
Both space subcommittees, mm-hmm. both on the House and on the Senate side. I think it was when he was a representative and he was the chairman of the council. NASA pretty much gifted him a ride on STS-63C, I think it was.
Because Congress funds, decides NASA's budget.
This was prior to the Challenger. Mm-hmm. So it was, they were kind of just handing out seats to people because they were like, oh, the shuttle's safe. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
This was like, he was the second, I think, sitting congressman to fly. I think John Young was the first. And the pilot of that mission was Charles Bolden, who was the NASA administrator during President Obama's term. Mm-hmm. So former administrator Bolden was there in person, and then former administrator Bridenstine was there virtually, mm-hmm. and then you had Bill Nelson. So the last three administrators were all there for the swearing in. And then I think his first statement was thanking Steve Jezerik, who's the acting administrator, for his time there, so, the last 100 days of stepping up and doing that. Mm-hmm. He was also, I think, within his first statement, was also congratulating SpaceX on the Crew 2 launch, which was interesting because he wasn't a fan of commercial crew, if I remember correctly. So, how it comes around, hey?
A decade ago, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, back when commercial was questionable, but it is interesting how a decade ago, how things have changed. So, yeah, it's awesome to see that we now finally have an administrator. The deputy administrator is going through her confirmation process right now. So it's definitely, exciting now for NASA that we have.
And that's Pam Melroy, who's a former astronaut, not just flown on shuttle, but was an astronaut for NASA. Yeah,
we have two. So the top two people of NASA have both gone to space.
Yeah,
yeah, which is interesting. Like, I think that's cool. I think that's really cool. I'm one person who believes I think there definitely within this top leadership there should be people who have gone to space. I think in there just to see, just to feel it and expect it and understand NASA's human spaceflight program. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be cool. Though, if I remember quickly, I remember Jim Bridenstine said he hoped he was the first administrator.
Who wasn't alive to see a moonwalk, right?
A moon landing.
Yeah.
And then he hoped he was the last. I'm pretty certain Bill Nelson has seen a moon landing.
Yeah, he's a bit older.
Yeah.
He's kind of Biden's age.
Yeah, I think my dad's seen the moon landing, and Nelson is older, much older than my dad. So I would agree. I think so. Oh, well. But talking about when it comes to moon stuff, though, Artemis 1.
Yeah.
Artemis 1's at KSC.
Yeah, the core stage has made it.
It's all there. The entire rocket for Artemis 1, the core stage, the boosters, the upper stage, the crew capsule. Is all there. The abort system, everything's there, just ready to be stacked up. So it arrived. Oh gosh, it was second to last day I was there in Florida. I don't remember the day. I think it was the 27th or 26th, I think, of April. It arrived in at Port Canaveral. It went right through. It almost evergreened the Port Canaveral. We were listening on the radio, and all of a sudden we just heard, oh, yeah, we're trying to straighten her out, which is totally not something you want to hear come over the radio of a barge that long. So, but no, yeah, it did great. It came in, went up, took about a week or so to get from Stennis to Kennedy Space Center, and then it took probably about a day from Port Canaveral to actually get into the turning basin by the vehicle assembly building, so which is actually right next to the press site, so which is cool. They did a press event. I felt bad for Derek again. Derek Wise, he was like, he had so many press events when we were there. He was like, and he had schoolwork, and then he had like the launch, and then he had this at like 3 o'clock in the morning or something. Like, he had to get, like, it was he had no sleep for like 3-4 days, I think.
It's a good problem to have.
And then he left for Starship like a few days afterwards. It was great, and we got great footage of it. And so it's now sitting inside the vehicle assembly building, waiting to be put onto the mobile launch platform with impulsed onto the solid rocket boosters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Artemis 1, who knows how long it's going to take, though. I think I heard someone, it's going to be many months of checkouts and tests still left to go. So we are not in the clear yet to see when we're going to get our real launch, but...
Yeah, Artemis 1, it was targeted for the end of this year, and that seems, but because of the mishap and the green run test, having to do that twice with a 6-week gap in between, that it's very unlikely that it's, they haven't said yet that it won't be this year, but the smart money's on early next year.
Yeah, if I'm a betting man, I would not be, that's not where I would put my money.
Whichever side of New Year's it's on, it's going to be really cool to follow that mission, because Artemis 1 is the uncrewed space launch system launch, the first flight of Orion around the moon, and then Orion comes home. So it's going to be really cool to watch, and then it gets that much closer to Artemis 2, which is the first lunar flyby mission with crew, and then Artemis 3 when we walk on the moon again.
Yeah, Artemis 1 is going to be a mission where it's, everyone's going to be there. I hope it, I wouldn't actually mind it being pushed back a little bit further. More chance to get COVID vaccines out there, have, restrictions way down, especially federal restrictions way down to where maybe we can have like a normal launch again, where we have like 200-300 people at the press site. Like, I don't, you obviously have never been there for missions like that. I have actually never been on the press site for that. I've actually never been on the NASA press site before. I'm a little jealous of everyone who has.
Oh, that's so fine. Yeah.
I know. I'm going to freak out when I first do it the first time. But no, it's going to be, I can't wait for it. I already have ideas for photos. It's going to be awesome. Like, that thing rolling out to the pad is going to be so stupid and insane. It's going to be so huge. So I can't wait for that. Next up with NASA. One last thing with NASA news. Uh-huh. Ingenuity's fourth flight. So we've been kind of like tracking Ingenuity, has been doing its own thing.
Oh, Mars helicopter Mars. Here. Yeah.
Someone made the comparison. I don't remember what it was, but all that, I just thought, like, I feel like Perseverance is Iron Man and Ingenuity is Spider-Man. Like, that, just that relationship just makes sense to me.
Cool.
Like, it just makes sense to me. Like, Ingenuity is just having his own fun time flying around, and Perseverance is like, come on now, let's go. Like, calm down. It's not that fun. He's like, it's so much fun. I'm flying around. So it is fourth flight. NASA deemed it completely successful after its third flight. Meet all of its requirements that it was supposed to. Of course, Ingenuity is the tech demonstrator helicopter that's on Mars. And so after its third flight, it was successful. The mission was deemed successful. And then it did its fourth flight. And right before it did its fourth flight, NASA announced its mission extension to it for another couple more weeks, to pretty much fly until it can't fly no more. Which is kind of like, that's like the best way to go out, pretty much. So what the mission extension will be at will be kind of supporting Perseverance in its mission, because you can't, it's at the point where Perseverance has to do stuff. Like, you can't just have Perseverance sitting there doing nothing and just waiting for Ingenuity to break or just stop flying. So what they're going to do is Perseverance will start moving. They're going to start doing their science on the ground at Mars.
Try to find signs of ancient life on Mars.
Try to find life on Mars, pretty much, yeah. And Perseverance is going to do its fifth flight in the same area it's been doing before. I think it's called Wright Field. I think they're calling it Wright Brothers Field, maybe. And it's going to do just faster, higher, longer flights, pretty much. After its fifth flight, it will then start doing like support missions for the rover, kind of like aerial, like surveillance, trying to find stuff for Perseverance to do. And then it will start landing at like unscouted locations, which is where things get a little hairy, because it the guy said on the press conference, it's not designed to do that. They don't know. They don't really. They only tested like all the components for the five flights. The only thing that's been tested longer than that are the landing legs, which he said were tested for 100 times, like 100 landings, pretty much.
Yeah.
So after like five flights, they have no idea what's going to happen. Like, is it even going to start up for a sixth flight? Who knows? Like, no idea. Which is, it's kind of like, it's already got paid. It's already did its job. Let's just like, yeah, let's like see what it can do pretty much now.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is exciting. You know, and this is going to be a years long story, you know, not with Ingenuity, obviously, but with Perseverance.
Hopefully, yeah, Perseverance will go on now. We'll go on for many, many more years to come. It's just a start for Perseverance, pretty much. Getting close to the end now with Ingenuity. Within the probably the next few months, it'll come to a close, its mission. So, So tell me about this Coldplay music.
Okay, so our 9to5 Mac colleague, Chance Miller, he is a gigantic Coldplay fan. And he sent me this message that was like, I think Coldplay is going to release new music from space, you know, like some kind of interaction with the space station and ESA and an astronaut from ESA on the space station. And then he found more clues about it, and it was all from like the SpaceX or Coldplay fan sites that he follows. And, so I was like, you should write about that. And so he did on Space Explored. And then as more evidence came out that this was actually going to happen, he updated the story with more evidence. And yesterday was the conclusion of this. So May 6th was the conclusion where, I don't recall his last name, but his first name is Thomas, I believe, the astronaut from ESA.
Thomas.
So he was on board.
He's from Europe. He's from Europe.
Yeah, yeah. So he did a video call from the space station with the windows behind him and everything, and
inside the cupola.
Yeah, exactly.
He looked so. I think it's Thomas Pasquaz. I don't know how he pronounced his last name, but
right.
He just came up on Crew 2. And he's already a natural up there. And he's a return space flight. He's done space flights before. But he was a natural. He's in the cupola just sitting there. And he's on daylight. And he goes, oh, technically we're supposed to wear these. And he puts on sunglasses. And
yeah, he's like, I'm not trying to be cool. I just need to wear these because it's daytime.
It's like, you look like a rock star up there, man. Like,
yeah. It was a really entertaining video because it was like, you know, so it's Tomas and then it's the band Coldplay, and they're kind of asking him questions about, you know, what it's like to be up there. And he does this really casual, like, turn the camera outside of the windows and like, oh, there's Crew Dragon and there's the Russian spacecraft, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
there's Earth.
So casual. Yeah. And just like what I found interesting was the outside view of, you know, the park spacecraft, how he's like, you know, in the cupola, you can, he's like, there's that one, and they're there, like they're very present, mm-hmm. and you know they're not too far apart. So it was
all four operational spacecraft are up there. Yeah, Dragon, a Cygnus spacecraft, Progress, mm-hmm. and Soyuz.
Yeah. So I thought that was very neat. And then I guess they sent him the song, but it was mostly to promote it. You know, that conversation that they had, and it was very cool. And from what I understand, the album. Because he got to ask the band some questions, and he why go with this alien theme sort of thing? And I think the way that Chris Martin put it was that it's allegory for humans, but to tell a different story of what could be different in like a different universe, and not to put that on humans, but to like tell a story through that lens. And then they also did the whole thing from space to show, you know, that it's. One planet, all the people, you know. So I thought it was very cool. And
it was
my favorite band, one of many, but like one of my top three is Angels and Airwaves, which is you can classify as space rock. And I was very mm-hmm. jealous that Coldplay got to do this first, and because Angels and Airwaves does have new music coming out, a song this month and an album hopefully this year. So I was just jealous of Chance's favorite band, and but I thought it was such a neat story, and it's what a cool way to, you know, put space in the mainstream like that. It was very, very neat.
Yeah, like I listened to the music. I love the video. I watched it. It was a quick like 7-minute video. It's not that long mm-hmm. either. It's kind of nice. And I listened to the song like afterwards, and I'm like, yeah. Space themed. It's pretty cool. Like, I'm not a huge Coldplay fan, but like, yeah, like I like Alternate Rock. Like, it's pretty nice. I like the music. So it was pretty cool they did it from space, and that's very much an ESA thing that they would do. Like, that's not something NASA would do. That's what I found. I was looking at them like, there's no way NASA would ever allow this.
they should though.
They should. But like there's so many laws with NASA about they can't do sponsorships, and they can't do like, you know, anyway, they would have to like give a fair chance to other musicians to do this pretty much.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Like there's so many laws with just like how government works as a whole. But like, yeah, ESA, like ESA and Russia have so much more fun up there than NASA. I think I remember Pizza Hut sponsored a flight up to the space station, and they delivered pizza to the Russians, not to the Americans, to the Russians.
Does Taco Bell up there, according to me, half an hour ago.
All right, let's talk about Blue Origin.
Okay, so what Blue Origin did this week is their 15th New Shepard flight?
Yeah, NS-15, New Shepard.
NS-15. Which is that why...
February, right? I
think yeah, it's February launch. Is that why we have SN-15? Like, it's just so much that lines up there. So New Shepard 15... it was successful. It was uncrewed as they've all been so far. But then after the mission, Jeff Bezos, the founder of Blue Origin, says it's time and kind of promotes the idea that we're going to fly crew on the next mission. And, they haven't done that yet, but they did do kind of a dress rehearsal for that mission where, you know, people from Blue Origin went inside and came back out, you know, did the whole routine. And so this next flight, which I think is going to be, it's the end of July, like the, I think July 30th.
July 20th is the current date. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is right around, isn't that like when Starliner from Boeing is going to reattempt its OFT mission?
It's very close. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all right in July. And so.
Orbital Starship.
Yeah.
OFT-2, CRS-22, I think, is getting close in there too. Like,
it's a midsummer extravaganza in space and near space. So they made this like a kind of announcement, kind of an event out of, on the anniversary of Alan Shepard's flight in space. Which is what New Shepard is named after, is Alan Shepard for the first, U.S. flight in space, first American to reach space. And so they say, we're going to have four people on board. We're going to pick three astronauts, the Blue Origin astronauts, I think is how they're going with this. And they're going to fly a fourth person, which will not be an astronaut as we know astronauts to be. It'll be the highest bidder for the seat, starting at $50 and then going, you know, way up. And that's interesting because we don't yet know what the cost of a New Shepard seat will be to go up, to go suborbital for 8 to 10 minutes. But, it's going to be expensive. I think the number that's going around is like $50,000 north of that, right? Or was it $500,000? I forget. But it will be a lot of money. And I think it's possible that the auction, route could mean that the fourth seat sells for more than they charge for a seat in general. Maybe it even informs what they charge for the seat for paying customers. And then what's also interesting is the kind of the physical requirements that you have to meet, you know, height and weight and the ability
to not meet either of those.
And the ability to go up and down stairs quickly and, like, you know.
Yeah, so it makes sense to have, like, these requirements. And they list it out in their terms of, like, use for the auction, like, maintaining the auction. And it's apparently, like, it's a $50 minimum bid. I was, like, looking in bidding, pretty much. And it was $50 minimum bid. And then you can bid up to $50,000. But if you want to bid more than that, you have to, like, go through this whole, like, process, pretty much.
To verify you're not just trolling, I think.
Contacting the auction house and verifying yourself and verifying your account. And then you can bid unlimited amounts. You have wire transfer $10,000 to them as a refundable deposit. Like, just to bid. So you can bid, like, unlimited amounts of money, pretty much. And, yeah, and then they have all these requirements, and there is going to be a full crew of six on this mission.
Okay.
It says that in the terms, that there will be six.
Okay, so not four, but six.
Six,
okay.
Six crew members.
Yeah.
Which is one of the seats will be yours, pretty much.
Yeah, and by the way, $500,000 is the rumor per seat, so.
The money, the highest bidder, whoever bids the most, that's pretty much a donation to Blue Origins Foundation. I can't remember the name of it, but I think it's like Kids of the Future, I think it's called. That's pretty much a donation.
Club for the Future is the name of the
club
of
the, for the future.
The group. Gotcha. Yeah. So July 28th.
Kids for the Future was some song in the 80s or 90s, wasn't it?
Kids for the Future. That's us years ago. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's good that Blue Origin is moving forward with crewed flight, for this suborbital flight with New Shepard. It's very different than what SpaceX does and their private flights that are coming up this year and in 2022. But it's interesting, and it's in the same ballpark as what Virgin Galactic is wanting to achieve and selling, you know, seats to go to space for a short period.
Yeah, so Blue Origin is doing some I'm pretty excited for Blue Origin. It's kind of cool that, I mean, the auction to the highest bidder, the price is a little bit higher than what it would be great, but but the whole reason why I have you, Zach Hall, on this week is because we're the only two people at SE who have watched the entirety of For All Mankind.
It's because I founded SE.
Yeah, that's why.
I have a knack
why.
For podcasting. Nah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We have the same mics. That's why.
Okay.
But
For All Mankind on Apple TV Plus, I got to watch the first 8 episodes before they came out and to sort of review the show. And then I got to see the last 2 episodes about a week and a half after that, before the show started. So that was amazing because I loved season 1. You know, For All Mankind on Apple TV Plus, is the premise is, what if the Russians landed on the moon and they beat Americans to the moon? Which in reality, they've never gone to the moon. But in this case, they won the space race, and so the space race continued, and that's the starting point for this alternative history world, and then everything changes because the space race continues, and the investment in NASA, you know, stays, and eventually NASA, like, can fund itself because it's like commercially viable on its own, and it's really fun. It's a really fun show, and so. And the second season is the first season is like in the 70s basically, and the second season is in the 80s. And so they've got this Cold War premise that, you know, based on reality. There's a lot of stuff in this show that's based on things that actually happened to kind of make it relatable, but without being, you know, this is just actually what happened. What could have happened differently if the space race continued. And Yeah, I mean, we can talk about specific things that happened in the season, in the finale, and just warn people if you haven't finished it yet. You know,
spoilers.
We recommend watching it. Yeah.
The reason why we waited a few weeks to do it is like because we wanted to give at least people a chance to binge watch it a few weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And then so now we're just, this is full of spoilers. If you guys haven't watched it, thanks for listening. Have a good one. See you next week. And then, but after this, there is no holdback on spoilers.
Yeah.
After this season two.
Yeah. So, in my spoiler free review that I posted, like as the show was about to premiere season two, I kind of, you know, we all saw the trailer and that was kind of action packed, but then the actual first eight episodes, well, I mean, there's a bit of action throughout, but it's really the way For All Mankind is like a personal drama story of like the characters in this world.
Yeah.
And it's space and NASA is like the setting, the backdrop for the show. And so I was very happy with like that, but I was just thinking this is nothing like the trailer. And so something has to happen in episode 9 and 10. And, the way it goes is that even episode 9 has more build up and tension. And then episode 10 is like an hour long plus and just delivers on every thread that was created throughout the season.
The season 2 trailer pretty much happens like the last couple episodes.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like sitting there. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is some of, every time I think of a trailer, I think of like, oh, it's like the probably the first couple episodes. And then yeah. I'm like, and so I was going to season 2. I'm like, oh my gosh, we're just gonna have like straight up wars on the moon. This is gonna be freaking awesome. Like they're bringing up guns. They're bringing up like everything. It's gonna be great. And all of a sudden, like it's like you get through like it's a lot of storytelling, which helps so much because the ending is so much better with it.
Yeah.
Like it's not like it's kind of like I think it was like season 3 of oh gosh, I just blanked on the name of the motorcycle club. Show Anarchy. The season where they're in Ireland is like the driest, most like non-action-packed season of Sons of Anarchy, but there's so much storyline there that it helps the rest of the series pretty much out.
Yeah,
it's kind of like what season the first two-thirds of the season 2 is pretty much for all mankind.
Yeah, I think for season 2 there's some things that happen, namely Karen's interaction with, you know, the grown-up friend of her deceased son, you know, that turned people off in a big way, and I felt that incident as it played out was very like as weird as it was to see on screen, it was very realistic as to like way people operate, you know, in real life.
It's very also like it showed that like times passed and everyone's so close and like,
yeah,
it got weird. Like that guy, yeah. Like I saw that. I'm just like, I'm sitting there like, I mean, was it necessary? I don't know. But like, sure.
it definitely like based on that, like crossing that line in her marriage, it definitely gave like gravitas to what happens next, which is Ed Baldwin's going off to space and she tells she tells him what happened basically. And he has to go to space with that, you know, that his marriage is rocky, you know?
Yeah. In a big way. I was thinking like, she's not going to tell him. Like, she's not going to tell him. Like, who tells that to their husband right before they go to space? Like, if I'm asking, I don't want to know that before I go to space. Like, we'll deal with it afterwards. But like, I don't want the last interaction. Like if the shuttle would, if he would have not made it back alive, like pretty much the last interaction would have been them screaming and yelling at each other.
Yeah.
It's very bold of her to tell him right before.
It's representative of their place and time, you know, in the relationship.
Yeah.
And,
to where it's also representative, like that maybe there isn't like the precedent that we have with someone going to space where like, they might not make it like back now, like, because it talks about Challenger, like Challenger didn't happen because they found it beforehand.
Right.
So they don't have the whole presence of like losing someone during a space flight other than Apollo 1, I think, is still in their timeline. So, and Deke Slayton. So like,
So, gosh, the line that she had, Karen's line that, you know, talking to Ed, you live in black and white and I live in the gray, and like, you know, it's like reality is more complicated than just these extremes. And like he wants an answer like now as to like, what's our fate. And she's like, no, you know, I thought that was like the ultimate character plot build up.
It was intense. Like that was like that scene was relatively intense. And then, I really liked the new Pathfinder. I love the new freaking shuttle.
So Pathfinder is like the military gets involved in this season, and it may or may not be armed. It's armed, and it's a shuttle that goes to the moon with weapons, nukes.
It's basically a NASA shuttle that may or may not have cooperation with the DOD. It has cooperation with the DOD. It may or may not be armed. It definitely has missiles on it.
Yeah.
It may or may not be going up to protect a payload. It's going up to protect a payload. Like it's so shrouded in secrecy, and like it is pretty cool. Like that, how though the nuclear engines, I think they got completely wrong.
I wouldn't know where to begin on even deciding that myself. So I think for most viewers, it's fine.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure it's fine. But the little bit of me goes like, oh, I guess it makes sense. Maybe they have powerful enough nuclear engines.
The engines are the weapons.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah. So there's that part of the story, which is, you know, Ed, who's, you know, has, I think has a military background, is the commander of the shuttle, and he knows that it's armed, and his mission is to go up there and like destroy the Russian counterpart, before they get shot first. And it's like, you know, one of the characters is Sally Ride in this fictional timeline, and and she's just like, no, you know, and it's at the last minute, when the last second really, when Ed makes the call of like what to actually do and not start this nuclear war on the moon with Russia, you know.
Sally Ride's awesome. Mm-hmm. Sally Ride, like, they got her character perfectly right. Awesome.
Yeah.
You can tell throughout the entire like season that when they picked that crew for Pathfinder, Sally Ride, and then the new guy for
who was the redhead guy
from the Air Force, and now he has to wear the Navy hat all the time, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And then like you can see like, oh yeah, that's all, and then you can see her slightly get more and more not comfortable with like where she's at. Like, she did not sign up to be a NASA astronaut to work with the DOD. Like, she does not. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it just gets to this point where like I think you're like in the head like, well, it's not gonna happen, because I look the same way. I'm like, well, like, yeah, they're gonna send missiles up there, but they're not actually gonna use them. Like, no one uses missiles in space. That's just stupid. Like, no, they're not gonna happen. And then like she just got to the point like, oh crap, is happening. And then where she stopped Ed pretty much from
And Fromenkind doesn't always use actual characters from history, because I think the way Ron Moore put it in an interview once was that he doesn't want to misrepresent people who existed in reality. But we saw Deke Slayton, obviously, and he even had like in season 1, and he had kind of a harsh reaction to like the coming out of a female lesbian astronaut, you know, in space. And, you know, that was a decision that they made. The Sally Ride characterization, you know, obviously she didn't go to the moon in a space shuttle with nukes. But the representation of like probably
no one went to the moon with a space shuttle with nukes.
right. As far as we know. But the representation of her character, I thought was really tasteful and nice.
Yeah. And the people who they did get, they did pull right from reality. I think they got really right. Sally Ride, Dee Slay, and they did Neil and Buzz were in there as well in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if Alan Shepard was in there, but Ed seems very Alan Shepard like. If you've watched, if you guys watch any other shows like The Right Stuff from Disney Plus, or if just any like looking at Alan Shepard, like he's very Ed Boldrin is pretty much like the nonfiction, the fictional or non-fictional, whatever fictional.
Yeah.
Of Alan Shepard, pretty much.
Yeah, and then there's the tension on you know the Jamestown moon base, which is, you know, the Americans shot and killed a Russian cosmonaut on the moon. It's the first gunshot on the moon in this fictional storyline, and it was the reality is that the Russian cosmonauts were not armed. And so they shot an unarmed cosmonaut and killed him. The guy's like helmet combust, and like he burned up inside of his suit. It's pretty intense.
It's interesting because that's like a little tidbit that doesn't make sense prior to a lot of viewers. But if you know your, if like it goes into formatting a lot. If you know your history, you know everything makes sense. Like the fact that, because like that wouldn't happen to a U.S. astronaut because their suit doesn't use pure oxygen. Well, no, they do use pure oxygen in their suits. So it would happen to them. I'm just thinking about this in my head now. But like, so they use pure oxygen in their suit. And so like when it shot, the bullet caused a spark and then it combusted. And when you're sitting there in pure oxygen for so long, like your body and like the suit and everything gets like so enriched with oxygen that you can't stop that fire pretty much. There's thing that can stop that fire. And so,
you can't stop drop and roll inside of a suit.
As soon as I saw like they looked up the suit and he's on fire, and I'm like, that's something like most people probably wouldn't get, but I love that about For Mankind that they have those tidbits in there.
It was also like very graphic. I mean, to me,
it was a very graphic scene, and it did make my stomach churn a little bit.
And then I thought, oh no, like this is going to be all out war now. And the reaction like was kind of
how much it was
for what happened. I mean, so I feel like there was like a bigger tension between the astronauts and cosmonauts because the injured cosmonaut, you know, that they took back to help, he wanted to not go back to the Russian side. He wanted to be on the U.S. side. Yeah, defect. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was the bigger tension between the Russians and Americans, that it almost felt like, oh, you killed a guy. Okay. But what we care about right now is that you are holding a defector and we want him back.
Yeah. It was very Cold War propaganda where, you know, he's trying to defect from the U.S. and the U.S. argues, well, no, they're holding him hostage. And then who do you believe at that point? Do you believe the U.S. saying, no, you want to stay here? Or do you believe the other? Like, it's just he said, it's pretty much.
So yeah. They said, fortunately, on the show, they showed us what he said. So, but you're right, from the Russian side.
From people on Earth, though, like from the Russians, like, they don't know. Like, they're just saying the U.S. said he wants to defect, but they don't know if that's true.
They killed someone and kidnapped another person. Yeah.
Yeah, they've already killed someone too. Like, how do you know that they're even, you know, how do you even know there's not a mutiny going on the moon? Like, the whole delay between how easy it is to just disconnect reality from the moon. Like, just like, all of a sudden it's just like, yep, nope, no more communications with Houston. Like, you're done. Like, you can't. Yeah.
And it's such a big contrast with the beginning of the series of season two, where it's like they're singing, you know, Bob Marley on the moon and watching the sun come up, like to where we end up, which is like he killed somebody.
I forgot about that scene until just now. That the beginning, how season two starts, is singing Bob Marley watching the sun come up, and then it ends with bloody murder.
And pretty much Jamestown's taken over by the cosmonauts, you know, because they want the defector, and like they're very mad about that. And they find out in the season that the base has been bugged for years.
Yeah. And the whole reason, like, I think the reason why they sent guns up was because they weren't armed. They thought they were armed, and they looked like they weren't armed, but then they really were armed. They came up with the AKs. Like, they were very much armed and not white AKs, though. Of course, the rifles that they used on the U.S. side were white M16s,
because it's the moon.
Because the moon, and like it reflects heat and it has to be white and NASA. And okay. That whole scene gets so tense. Like, and it's like you don't want to shoot because, of course, if they shoot, that could be the end of them. They hit something wrong. Like, it's like they don't want to just shoot randomly, even though there were some scenes where they kind of did, which could have been terrible. But
then there's the killing off of two beloved characters from season one and season two.
That's where they go out. That whole storyline, I think that's the right way for it to go out.
Yeah. With Tracy Stevens and
Gordo.
Gordo, yeah.
Yeah, Gordon Steele.
And I thought that their storyline was just like such a good representation of like a true love story where it's not, you know, rainbows and unicorns. It's, you know, lifelong hardship, personal struggles and growths. And on the day that they die, they're reunited. You know, it's, mm-hmm. it's beautiful to me. I didn't see it coming that those two characters would be killed off and not in season three.
Yeah. I at the end, I didn't expect it, but as soon as it happened, I go, you know what? Yeah. Like mm-hmm. That's a good way for them to go out, I think.
Yeah.
That, it seems very, you know, very them of, you mm-hmm. know, two test pilots, as Trace Stevens, or two pilots, early pilots back then, pretty much all of them were test pilots, you know, just doing something daring one last time and together. Again, another very graphic, graphic scene. It's interesting. If you want to know the detail, like go a little bit more into like scientific detail, like Scott Manley, who's a YouTuber, did a whole video on whether or not you can actually do that. And he actually said that if it was, you know, with his calculations, which he's an astrophysicist, he's pretty smart. He goes, like, they could have lived. Like, he was kind of like, they probably would have lived.
I mean, it's obviously a writer's decision to kill them, but
it was very, very smart.
And it really showed, like, you know, we saw Gordo's kind of miserable existence in season one and most of two, and then he really makes this comeback, and like the actor, he actually put on that weight and lost it. Like, it's crazy.
I can't imagine how hard that was. You mentioned in the interview how hard, like, it was very difficult.
But he
goes to Tracy's like current husband
mm-hmm.
and just goes, I wish I had those big of
that courage that it takes to like be
the courage. I would never be able to walk up to someone else's like husband, be like, I'm going to take her back.
Yeah.
And then just leave. Like,
right. Yeah. I laughed out loud at that scene because it was just so, so bold and
it was
courageous.
So that was such a great scene. Like, I'm going to get her back when I'm up there.
And he's like, you know, she's a wild horse. He can't do anything. There's nothing on that moon or earth that you can do. You know, it's help to her. And, and he actually, you know, goes to the moon and like they're friendly and he's put himself back together again. And he volunteers to go out and, you know, fix what's wrong. And she's like, I'm not going to let you do it alone. And she goes out with him and they go out together. Like they go out together, you know, mm-hmm. and it's just, it's as sad as it is, it's also lovely. You know, it's a lovely way to end that storyline.
I'm extremely excited for what season three will be like.
Yeah. So it's
going to be another couple more decades. So probably early 2000s, right?
No, it's the 90s. The way that you know is because of Nirvana playing.
Okay. Okay,
yeah,
that's fair.
So the song is of the 90s, and okay. I think it's Come As You Are, which I think they also used in Captain Marvel, which is also like a 90s setting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Very 90s. Blockbuster and all.
Blockbuster, yep.
yeah, but the teaser for in season one was that awesome Sea Dragon, you know, conceptual cargo craft that goes to the moon and launches from the ocean for safety. That was really cool. It didn't tell you anything about the next, like, it just told you that this is going to go way more advanced than it is right now for season two, which it did. But then Sea Dragon was just like a casual cargo ship, you know, it wasn't anything beyond that. And, but it was like how they, you know, established their presence on the moon, basically. This teaser shows you like, this is what season three is going to be about. You know, they show boots on Mars and they play Nirvana.
I don't know if I told you that. So like, I got that spoiled really like,
oh really?
Yeah. Someone spoiled it to me and I was like last minute and all of a sudden I was like, dang it. Like I was so pissed off when it was just a screen. It's just the image of them on the moon, like on Mars.
You're on and Mars. Like, yeah.
And it was like, this was a few, and it was like, I think it was when the last episode came out and, And I was still like four episodes in, like away from it. Like I still have four more episodes to even get to the end. And it just came out. Yeah. I was fist pound. I'm like, dang it. Cause I didn't know where it was. Like, was this the ending of season like two? Did they end on Mars? Or like, is this like, where did this pop up? And then thankfully it didn't really spoil it. Cause it was the last credit scene pretty much.
Yeah. And my reckon is that season three won't be, here's life on Mars and how it plays out. It'll be, this is the journey to like how to Mars, mm-hmm. you know? So
now we can, now we go to Mars, and I'm interested to see if they do the commercial route. Like, because, mm-hmm. She was, deputy administrator. I don't remember her character name, but,
Pam Melroy.
Pam. That's right.
No, that's the reality that we live in. No, that's not her name. I think.
And, oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought her name was Pam. Was her girlfriend on the show Pam?
I think so.
There is a Pam, but like, she was talking about how like she could leave NASA and she can get a job in the commercial sector and she can get to Mars, and that it, like kind of like mirrors what is Alan right now in our commercial. Yeah. What's her name?
Alan Waverly.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And then like, I'm so interested to like where the commercial sector comes in.
And her girlfriend was named Pam.
Yeah. I knew it was Pam. All right. Yeah. And the, what was it like? So how does commercial and NASA get along where NASA doesn't need commercial space pretty much anymore? Like, mm-hmm. NASA has a problem with budget in this reality.
Yeah.
And the reason why we have SpaceX and even like how United Launch Alliance is even set up, the reason we have like, or Sierra Nevada, Blue Origin, whatever, is because NASA needs commercial partners to get things done because they can't do it on their own cheap, you know, as cheap anymore with their budget. So all their money is pretty much going to like Perseverance and the next spacecraft now is going to be an SLS. But what company has been trying to go to Mars? Like, I'm so interested in like, what's this company? What's this mission? What's this rocket? Like, what's going
on? Well, I mean, it's NASA wants to, and that's part of the plot, between mm-hmm. the administrator who was killed off in this season.
And, by the way, yeah, he gets killed off too.
Yeah.
It was funny. I was talking with Derek and I'm like, well, they haven't killed anyone off yet this season. It'll probably be a pretty tame season. And then as soon as I said that, I went to go watch the next episode and he gets shot down within the first like 5 minutes.
Yeah, which I didn't realize like has historical, you know, it comes from history. It's not obviously what happened, but it's based in history.
It's something that would have happened back then. Like, it's not.
I mean, there was a plane shot down that was. Yep. Yeah, that the way that it's shown in the show is like, was that a military plane with citizens on it? You know, passengers, and they're like, no, why would we do that? You know, mm-hmm. but it's questionable. So, I think as we talk about season three, I think the character Alita, who is, you know, goes from a little girl to like a teenager or maybe like 20s in this mm-hmm. season, that she plays a bigger part in like her career is advanced in the next 10 years.
Where she becomes like an associate administrator or something like that. She takes over Johnson or something like that.
Yeah, I was thinking Mars though, like, you know.
Well, if they go to Mars, like she would be like Johnson would be in charge of that.
I mean like her going to Mars, like as part
like
of
an
her
engineer,
journey.
Like they need engineers out there, pretty much. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, that would make sense. So they need
to like
people out
that
there
boot on the on Mars solve. Could that boot on Mars could be her.
That would be interesting. It's definitely
and that's
nice.
Where I really. That's where I really think that like we're going to see Mars, like boots on Mars in episode 9, like 8 or 9 of season 3, not like episode 1, unless it's like a flashback or something that it's going to be the journey
how
there.
How old do you think Ed is going to be in the 90s?
Gosh, 50s? He's probably, 50s.
He already has gray hair like going, so he's mm-hmm. probably got to be in his, well, you have gray hair and you're 30, but so.
Yeah, but he's going to be there. He's going to be in season 3.
Do you think he's going to be at Mars? Do you think he's going to be in the Mars or do you think he's done?
That's a tough call. Yeah,
I don't think he is, but I think he
Molly Cobb.
I think he's too old. He's going to retire after this. He's definitely going to retire after this whole this whole crazy stuff happened with his wife, and then with the whole Pathfinder on the moon, and like.
But isn't Molly Cobb like she's the new head astronaut?
chief of the astronaut office.
Yeah, and her motivation to do that is the way that Ed did, which was to assign yourself on the seat that you want, you know. And she wants to fly again, and that's the way that she's going to do it, is self-assign, so she can be involved.
She didn't get the treatment for her eyes though, which is a whole nother storyline, by the way, in season two of her eyesight. So where is she going to be in 10 years with her eyesight? If she's, maybe there's a treatment that comes out, she's cured. That would be interesting.
That's true.
That would be a cop out though, I think, writer wise, that she's going to just have magically cleared, which you know what? I think there is a cure for what she has in the '80s, I think, is curable now. So
interesting. Yeah,
I think it is. It's some different types of what's it called again? Where your eye is cloudy and you can't see anymore, pretty much.
Yeah.
There's some, there's different types that where like there is curable. So maybe like that, but I think that's a cop out. I think like that she is now, I think she's done. Like, I think she's done.
I will be sad to not have a Gordo and Tracy in season three. I think their characters are really fun.
I would miss Gordo and Tracy. They were really great characters.
And Michael Dorman as an actor, like, he's great. He goes places. he's a sad person very well, you know?
Yeah.
Sarah Jones, who plays Tracy Stevens, I haven't seen anything else with her head, but you know, She's been a fun part of the show, and so for their storyline to be over is interesting, and we'll miss them. Margot, you know, and her relationship with her Russian counterpart.
That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I mean, in the '90s, the end of the Soviet Union, possibly.
But what's really, you know, we know will be a storyline is that her Russian counterpart, like, maybe there's like a genuine connection there, but also we know that whether it's against his will or not, he's having to kind of work her as a pawn in America, and she's charmed by him. And even if she is helpful and, like, you know, helping the Apollo Soyuz happen, helping Russia avoid the disaster that, you know, with the spatial design that they stole, you know, and she kind of suggests this is how you fix it if, you know, that kind of thing. She's obviously like well intentioned, but she's a high level NASA official who's basically compromised because she's willing to work around the rules with her Russian counterpart because she thinks it's the best thing for, you know, their efforts. And
she's an interesting character. I don't know how she'll handle that. Like, I don't know. Like, she's very dedicated to NASA. And I think she would dump everything to stay with NASA. But then again, like, this is kind of the first person that she's connected with on such like a emotional level. Because even if he's using her and she might even use him, like,
I think the Russian counterpart is Sergey.
Connection there, like they obviously are like meant to be together. So she give up everything to leave the United States? Probably even leave the United States and run off with him. Like,
yeah, like well, when does, you know, when does this when does she become aware of this? So
also that's and how does she become aware of it too? Like,
yeah. I mean, when and
how is usually two big questions.
And it's definitely not the end of the Cold War. Like, once they're, you know, have a person inside who's unwillingly, you know, a Russian spy for them, you know, they've compromised a NASA official who doesn't even know it. That all makes the next season really interesting. And that's also why I think like that Boots on Mars scene, the teaser, is like the result of this next struggle, which is Russia. It's Cold War, but in the '90s, and you know, we see the consequences of what happens with Margot being you know, compromised in that way, and what happens next. So,
did it show if it was a U.S. or Russian boot on Mars?
I don't know.
What if Margot defects to the Soviet Union and they go to Mars first?
What if by being compromised, like, she assists Russia on getting there first? Not only does the U.S. lose the space race to the moon, but to Mars as well in this fictional story. I don't know.
And they're like, okay, we're going to Pluto. Like, we're just going to Pluto.
What I am aware of is, like, there's at least, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 seasons written out.
And I was gonna ask how many. I can't remember how many seasons they've planned out. They've planned out a lot, though.
Yeah,
they've only even signed for two more.
Well, season three is in the making. like they're actively filming it now. And then I think it's clear that the show is a hit in terms of like what Apple TV needs to be a hit for them.
Yeah.
And that it's not going to go anywhere. Like they're going to pull this thing to its conclusion.
I haven't watched many of the other like starting shows that came out with Apple TV, but like I know I've watched this one. This one's definitely like if they're all like this, I'm not sure they all were, but like I heard there was a couple more like this is what Apple TV needs pretty much. Like it's great. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah.
That's real, and yeah, I mean, these are shows that would have existed on other services if Apple TV wasn't a thing, if Apple TV Plus wasn't a thing. So,
oh really? I didn't know. I thought this was like fully Apple TV.
Yeah, they had the idea. I think like they kind of it had history before Apple TV Plus existed, but it was kind of like a pitch to Ron Moore of like, you know, what if we do a space show basically, and then.
Cool.
He had the idea of like alternative history as a way to do that. And but for many of the shows, they were kind of bid upon and then based on the concept and then they were created after Apple, you know, won the bid. But this definitely fits the bill for Apple and kind of what they want to show. So it's great.
That's cool.
Yep.
So yeah. See you on Mars.
Definitely watch it, and it's a show that's rewatchable too. I think that the way I felt about the first
season two with my parents,
the first season I was watching week by week, and I felt like it was just kind of slow, and it was just not as much space as I was anticipating. But it eventually paid off, and the world was then built, you know. And season two, I had no reservations about like, do I even like this? I was like, no, I love this storyline and these characters, and it's, you know, if you like season one, once you finish it, like you're gonna like season two.
Yeah,
and now I know what the show is gonna be.
If you like the alternative history part of it, you're going to love this, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's like the main takeaway. If you love alternative history, you're going to love this.
Yeah. So for all mankind, season two, we love it.
We all love it. Yeah. So
five stars.
5 out of 5. I give it 6 out of 5 if I could.
Yeah.
So nice. Thank you everyone for staying with us for this longer episode. In our little rant at the end with For All Mankind. So if you guys like more of this, make sure you guys leave us a review. Thank you all for watching. You guys listen to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Google Podcasts, I think.
Mooncast, Marscast.
Marscast?
Can we say one more thing? What's up with the NASA worm logo? Like,
so I think it's the only reason why it's different is for copyright. Like legal reasons. The reason why the meatball is also different in season one than the original.
Is it?
I think it was backwards. Yeah. Like Apple wants to copyright or whoever wants to have it copyrightable. And so they changed up the NASA worm logo as well in season two.
It is flat. They like add a line of like flatness
or trademarkable or whatever it is.
Hmm.
Yeah. This is a line. Hmm. Yeah. Like they didn't want to, like you could just use Apple, like NASA stuff. Like NASA's logos are public domain. I'm pretty certain.
Yeah.
But you can't copyright that or trademark it or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Nice. All right.
All right.
Finish up your signing off then. Thank you for that diversion.
For listening again. You can find us on all the major podcasts. You can also listen to us at spaceexplorer.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Seth Kirk. That's SethKurk. And then you can follow Zach at
Paulo Zach, APOLLOZAC. And I'll give you guys a tip this week. If you ever go to 9to5mac.com/space, it takes you to Space Explored because of course.
Because of course it does. And and of course we do this show every week, almost every week. We didn't do it last week, but we'll do it again next week. And thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
You can't tell, but I'm waving goodbye.
Goodbye.